We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning and thank you for joining me for Sunday Sunrise, a public affairs show produced locally by Entercom Phoenix. I'm Minnie Salas, your host, and this morning I'm joined by one of my favorite guests. She has been here on the show a few times before, glass artist Carol Perry, who has been participating in the upcoming Hidden in the Hills studio tour for 23 years. Jane Boggs is also joining us today. She's a mixed media and gourde artist. She's also participated in the event for over 20 years and is the event co-chair. Hidden in the Hills will be held this year in the Cave Creek Carefree area in late November, and it's put on by the Sonoran Arts League. So tell me about the organization first.
The Sonoran Art League is made up of approximately 700 members. It is a derivative of the Cave Creek Craft Council that was initially in Cave Creek. We are a nonprofit, and we have, I can't even begin to tell you how many different programs we have. Hidden in the Hills is our premier event and the longest running. Actually, I would say it's probably how the Sonoran Art League came to be with Hidden in the Hills. But now we have programs for youth art. We have vet programs. We can't even begin to list all the programs we have.
And it's small works.
Yeah, it's a fun organization. There's something for everybody. The one thing that is very difficult for us to get across to the general public is you do not have to be an artist to be a part of the Sonoran Art League. You can just be an art lover and want to be involved in something sort of unique and different.
Oh, my gosh. She's right that we started out Hidden in the Hills was kind of how the Sonoran Art League got reborn out of the Cave Creek Craft Council, which had kind of retired in the late 80s, early 90s. And then it just had a resurgence because one of our members came from California where they had a big studio tour in the Santa Cruz area. And she proposed it to us. And we'd never heard of such a thing back then, and we thought it was just a fabulous idea. So we were the very first studio tour in Arizona back in 97. Now, of course, as I'm sure you know, there are studio tours pretty much in every town in America.
And they're a lot of fun. I did it for the first time last year, and I regret that it's my first time, by the way, because it's been around for so long. But tell me, first of all, the dates for the 23rd annual Hidden in the Hills Artist Studio Tour.
It's November 22nd, 3rd, and 4th, the first weekend, Friday through Sunday. And then it's November 29th, 30th, and December 1st, the second weekend. So it always bookends Thanksgiving, if you will. And the hours are 10 to 5.
And you've been doing it for all 23 years.
That's right.
And Jane, you've been doing it for 21 years?
Yes, that's correct.
So can you tell me a little bit about how the beginning was? You know, did you get many people to come out? And
this is our first and second year map, and it's a trifold 8.5 by 11 sheet. It had 27 studios with, I think, maybe 35 artists. And now
we have our directory. It's glossy. They're actually collector items for the people that come to the show. And it has,
it's like 130 pages or something.
160 pages year. And it's absolutely fabulous. And it has pictures of all, a thumbnail print of every artist that's in it, which is 199 artists and 47 studios. So from a trifold to this, we've come a long ways.
Yes, absolutely. So did you get a lot of people back then?
You know, we did. I was surprised that we didn't have an advertising budget per se. In fact, the very first year, I was on the board at the time, and we allocated $250 for the total budget for this event. And with that, we did these maps. One of our artists actually did the artwork that's on this map. But I was surprised. I can remember being quite busy at our studio. We only did it for one weekend, and I think it was only Saturday, Sunday the first year. But it was amazing how many people came to our studio then. And we had people come on bicycles, and then they would have to come back in their car later to pick up what they bought. They just came to see what was going on, because most of our advertising were these big sandwich boards that we put out in the neighborhoods directing people to the open studios.
So what was it like for you when you first started doing it?
I'll have to add, we actually had somebody come on a horse. But you have to realize it's up in the Sonoran Desert.
Right.
And 21 years ago, we had a lot of people on our street that had horses. But we had quite a few people. I had five guest artists with me, because that's nice when people finally do come to your studio. And it just, I mean, I was hooked from the first year. And actually did fine as far as sales go, and met a lot of nice people. In fact, we still have some of the same people that will come and they say, I'm not sure we need any more of your artwork, but we have to come every year just to see what's going on. So, yeah, it's really fun.
Well, you know, we have a mission that we've had from the very beginning, that sales was not our top priority. From the beginning, we wanted to engage people in the process of how art is made, what inspires an artist to make it. And this was even before home tours, so a lot of people came just to see these really unique mini home-built studios up in the foothills of Cave Creek, because they were made by artists, and some of these studios are really incredible and very unique.
Yeah.
So they came for that as much as they came for the art, but we made a big point of introducing the fact that everyone should be comfortable with art. Everybody should know how art impacts the lives, particularly of students. We encourage people to bring their children so that they can see how art impacts your life in a positive way and brings a community together in a way that really matters and makes for a stronger community.
Mm-hmm. You know, last year when I went with my sister and my brother-in-law and their 7-year-old daughter, my niece.
Perfect.
And it was perfect for all of us, because we mm-hmm. all found something that we really, really loved.
Perfect.
So it's perfect for all ages. So, Carol, I'm familiar with your story. You've been on the show a few times and you've shared it, but for those that haven't heard it, can both of you share your story of how you got started with art?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I graduated from college and went right to work for IBM, and I spent the next 22 years in the computer industry, and then one day I didn't. I went home to Oregon, where I grew up, to walk in the woods, and the woods I walked in had a glass camp, and I loved glass. I'd been collecting art glass for a number of years at that point, and I discovered very quickly that making things with my hands and working with glass in every form, blown glass, fused glass, cast glass, was something that I felt so passionate about so quickly, I just wasn't willing to give it up right away. I thought I would come home and play with glass for a little while. I had, you know, money to live on for a while, and then I'd figure out how to spend the second half of my adult life. Well, here I am 30 years later making glass. I love it.
Were you doing it as a hobby before you actually started doing it as a profession?
I wasn't. And people say to me, well, how did you even know that you had artistic talent? And the truth is, right up until I found myself in a glass camp, my answer to the question would have been not in a million years. Although I had a mother who was eager to tell everybody that since I was a child, she knew I really had a lot of artistic talent. I had no idea.
Did you find that the people around you were supportive of that transition?
Very supportive, yeah. Yes. Yes, very.
So, Jane, what is a gourd artist, first of all, and how did you start doing that?
Well, a similar story. We had moved to Arizona because we were trying to find our forever home, which we did find. And I had retired. I was director of tennis for the United States Tennis Association. And after I retired and we moved to the desert, I just fell in love with it instantly. And I said to my husband, you know, I had this little art bug rolling around in me. I had no art education, but I realized later on that I'd always done things that could be related to art. So I signed up for oil painting lessons. And actually, when we first moved, I connected the dots years later. I actually went to the first Hidden in the Hills tour that was in my neighborhood. But anyway, so I started taking oil painting classes. Felt like Rembrandt. I don't know that I was Rembrandt, but I felt like Rembrandt and was just loving it. And a friend said to me one day, I'm going to a gourd farm down on South Mountain, which is no longer there. Will you go with me? And I said, why would I want to go to a gourd farm? Well, as you do.
Did
with,
you know what a gourd farm was?
Not particularly, but as you do with really good friends, it's like, oh, she can't have anything I can't have. So we went. Our directions were to go out central over a wooden bridge past the goat farm and turn right. So we went, and it was a gourd farm, and we looked out in this field, and there were thousands of gourds, all different shapes and sizes, that grow sort of like a pumpkin and a squash. And I had my expedition. Long story short, I think we bought about 100 gourds that day.
Oh, my.
With no clue of what to do. So she and I cackled all the way home about it, pulled in the driveway, and my husband was standing there, and he said, seriously, are you out of your gourd? And at that time, there were no how-to books, and we did find one book that showed at least how to start cleaning and what to do with it. And it just grew from there on. The only thing that I'm pleased about is the first two or three art shows that I entered, I always was in the other category because nobody even knew what gourd or gourd art was. And I really hated it when people would say, what do you do? And I said, I'm a gourd artist. And they usually would just laugh. They thought I carved pumpkins. And it's a long ways from there now.
I'm joined this morning by glass artist Carol Perry and gourd artist Jane Boggs. They are both participating in the 23rd annual Hidden in the Hill studio tour. And I know it's kind of hard to do this on the radio. We don't have the luxury of television where you could show your art pieces. But can you describe the type of art that you do?
Well, glass, I like to say that we do sculptural functional art, and we do functional sculptural art. So, and in truth, I do a lot of sculpture that is considered fine art glass sculpture, but we also do a lot of functional. Probably the most common thing we do is custom dinnerware, because a lot of people come, particularly during Hidden in the Hills, and they'll see a lot of gift items or dishes, plates, bowls, and they'll want something for their own dinner table. And because it's unique and because they help design it, they know that they now have a set of dinnerware that's made out of glass that no one else will ever have. Mm. The sculpture I do, I have a signature piece called Glass Tapestries that I've been doing for almost the full 30 years. And it's made out of thousands and thousands of fine, fine glass cane, or threads of glass, if you will. It looks like fabric because I cross stack those threads of glass 9 layers deep, put it in the kiln, heat it up so that it's just hot enough for all those glass threads to stick together, tack fire, but not melt into a sheet of glass. And then I open the kiln, reach in and pull it out, because now it's become a single unit, and I fold it by using my hands, which are in big, fat Kevlar gloves. My whole body's covered in big, fat Kevlar aprons and sleeves. And I fold it into a basket shape, put it back in the kiln, because it still has to be annealed. So sometimes that's hours and hours. Sometimes it's even as much as a week of laying all those threads up. But it's only in the kiln for 3 hours before I fold it, and then another 12 hours for the annealing process. That's my signature piece. That's Carol Perry. Everything else we do is under the studio name of Laughing Glass, because my husband's involved, and we have a metal artist. We do a lot of steel and glass sculpture. So there's actually three of us who are part of Laughing Glass.
And for anyone who doesn't understand what all this looks like, this is exactly what Hidden in the Hills was designed for, because you get to actually walk through the studios and see.
Yes, and I try to have it laid out so they can see how there's an initial fuse firing in one kiln and a slump firing in another kiln, so they can see the steps. There's never anything other than my signature piece that is only in and out of the kiln one time. All the dishes and all the giftware and the vases spend 2 different trips minimum into the kiln, sometimes 3 and 4.
So, Jane, can you describe your art and how long it takes for you to create something?
Well, my art, I have to start by saying I was oil painting, as I told you, and I was always intimidated by that big white canvas. My teacher said, well, paint it another color. But when I bought my initial 100 gourds, I never painted again. I mean, I do paint on the gourds, but I never painted on canvas again. And I find the gourds are so interesting because of all the different shapes and sizes. And you can just be totally outside the box. And I think I really loved it because there weren't any, you should do this or you should do that. It was whatever I could think of to do on my very own. And gourds dry hard. They're just like wood. I have people ask if they rot and, you know, why should I buy a piece of art like this and it might not be here in 2 years or what? And it's, no, that's not so. It almost becomes like petrified wood. So I will get a piece, and depending on what I want to do with it, my specialty are masks. I do big masks, and I embellish them with thousands and thousands of feathers, and that's probably one of my specialties too, because I don't know if there's anybody else that can put as many feathers in one of my masks as I do. I did one that was called Avatar after the movie. It inspired me, and the mask was 5 feet by 5 feet, which people can't believe. So I embellish them. I wood burn on them. I paint on them. You can do just about anything. I've made drums out of them.
I have to interject that her work is so spectacular that she was chosen to be on the cover of the Hidden in the Hills directory a few years ago. That's how brilliant her work is.
How long does it take you to do all that?
That's a good question. Almost everybody asks me that. My answer is I don't do one piece at a time because of the process, the cleaning or wood burning or whatever. I will work on probably, again, if I'm doing masks or if I'm doing a sculpture figure, I'll do at least 3 or 4 of them at a time. So when one is drying and whatever that process is, I can be working on the next one or the next one or the next one. Mm. I, at one time, decided to write down the time I spent on a particular piece so I could answer the question. And it made me crazy because it felt like I was rushing. And I thought, you know, that's going to be a question that just doesn't get answered.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, on some of my mask headdresses, the headdress will have to be done in like 8 different parts. And when I start a part, sometimes it will take me 8 hours to do one part. And because of the process, once I start on that part, I can't stop. I have to finish that part no matter what. And I'll stand there for 8 hours just totally engrossed in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun.
So is it a good thing then to have the studio at home? Because you probably do end up spending a lot of time and it's just right there.
I mean, absolutely.
It's walking distance.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to commute in LA 70 miles one way. Now I commute from the master bedroom to the teapot to the pole barn, and I love it.
Yeah.
I
and sometimes
my car.
And sometimes in your pajamas.
Yeah, right. I can if I want to. The other thing I wanted to point out is that 21 years ago when Jane started doing Hidden in the Hills, she was the first gourd artist we'd ever heard of and we ever had. Today, when you come to Hidden in the Hills, you're going to find 7 gourd artists. When I started doing it 23 years ago, there were 2 of us doing glass. This year, there are 18 glass artists. There are over 30 jewelers on this tour. Mm-hmm. It's amazing the diversity of art from, you know, fine oil paintings to some very interesting sculptural metal and glass and ceramic. Oh, my gosh, we have some fabulous ceramic artists on this tour. There's something for everyone here, believe me.
Well, like I said, last year I went for the first time, and unfortunately I went on the last day, and I didn't start early in the morning. So I only got to see a few of the studios, and they were really amazing. And you spend a lot of time there because there's so much to see. So I do recommend that people go the first day of the first weekend and then
absolutely.
Go, you know,
at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yes. But tell me about how much time do people usually spend at each one of the studios?
You know, it varies. We have had people come, and one lady was coming through and she was like racing through, and I said, no, stop. What are you doing? She said, well, I have to get to see all 100 and whatever we had that year, 90 artists. I said, no. I said, what you're supposed to do, really, is stop and talk to the artist, and if they're demoing the art and explaining the art, you enjoy that. And so she sort of relaxed a little bit. And then she wouldn't go away. She really got into what the show is about. And that is, you know, people relate to different things. And she sat and talked and talked. And I think she probably could have made a gourd piece of art by the time she left. But that is what it's about. It's not to see how many you can go to, although we'd love people to see everyone. But it's really interesting. And if you happen to purchase a piece of art, it's about knowing the artist and right. how they did that and not just, it's not like going to a store and buying something. And you create relationships over the years. And what Carol alluded to a little bit is a lot of people think it's a home tour. And so the artists do. They some of them live in funky little places, and you get to go in their studios, and it's just terrific.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you were sharing with me off the air about some of the wildlife you see out there?
Jane, you start.
Well, we do not. In fact, I don't think we have any gated community studios.
We just have one.
Just one. So most of us live out on acreage and stuff, and several years ago, we had, you can come from our backyard and come up through the driveway and go out. And so we were all standing there looking at the art, and we had people wandering around. And somebody says, oh my gosh, there's a javelina. Well, actually, there were six javelinas. And I said, don't panic. Everybody just sort of back up and stand quietly, and they won't bother you. And the javelinas walked right through where all the artists were and all of the patrons
were
walking.
They were there for the tour, too.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, and they just walked through like nothing. And then last year, we were visited by a bobcat. Which, don't anybody feel like your life is threatened or anybody's going to attack you, but they just, we've just wandered by and sort of looked at us. And
we have a couple of studios further up in the hills that almost always have deer in the yard or in the wash right beside them. So a lot of people see the deer up at Dick Mueller's studio, Judy Bruce's studio. We've had bobcats, javelina. We have a lot of squirrels, big fat squirrels.
Oh, hummingbirds. We have a lot of hummingbirds. Yeah. So, I mean, you get all sorts of things. You get the petting zoo, you get art, you get a home tour, and in most cases, you might even get snacks and some beverages.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, that's sort of a competition. There's a few of us that go out of our way to make sure that the food is very enticing, and then we like to send messages along with people. Now, when you get to Jane's studio, tell her that you just had steak and lobster over here.
Well, I was going to say, being out there, you know, so close to nature, and when you see this, you know, you probably see this all the time when you're out there working in your studio, it must be inspiring for you, too. And do you get inspiration from that to create the art that you create?
Oh, absolutely. And it's just, it's a way that nature, or you feel like nature, is telling you that what you're doing is the right thing, because she's willing to share all of her creatures with you out there. My studio is primarily a big open pole barn, open on both ends and then enclosed on the sides and covered, of course. So they just walk right through. I had a hummingbird build a nest right over the table I work on because there was a rope that hung down, and she built her nest right on this little tiny knot at the end of the rope. So I got to watch her sit on her nest, raise her babies. We were even there the day she talked her babies out of the nest. It was so cool.
Well, in my case, I'm a nature lover, too, and we're always out in the yard and doing stuff, but I also like to kayak and hike, and because my sculptural people have a lot of different embellishments on it, I will have, for instance, devil's claws that I get when I'm hiking, or if I'm kayaking out at Bartlett Lake, I pick up a lot of the driftwood, and I use it in my pieces. And it's actually sort of fun, because sometimes when a person's in my studio, I will give them the art test and ask them if they can describe the different pieces that I have on my art that I actually have collected in my own yard, pods and seeds and whatever. So, yeah, it's really fun. But plus, it's so pleasant. I mean, you can't help but love being there.
Carol Perry and Jane Boggs are participating in the upcoming Hidden in the Hills studio tour in the Cave Creek Carefree area in late November. Now, you both have been doing this for over 20 years. So what's your favorite part about participating in it?
The people, seeing so many people that we only see once a year, but we've seen every year for 20 plus years. It's a way to catch up. Sometimes it's crazy busy, but we always find a way to sit and talk to the people who've been coming. And I want to stress again, they don't all come to shop. In fact, very few of them come to shop. Right. If they see something they like, they might grab it. But that's not our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is to share the art. So I would encourage anyone to come, even if they don't intend to spend a dime, except maybe to go to lunch somewhere that we might recommend. It's worth it. And I love that interaction with all the people.
I have to say ditto. I know there are some artists that create their art, but they don't like to talk to people. And I absolutely love talking to the people and talking about my art and showing them the art, or telling about our area. And I'm with Carol. It isn't about the sale. It really isn't. Because a lot of people come and they just want to hear your story and talk about what you do. And I do. I love that part.
Yeah. So you encourage people to ask questions then?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's why we're there, really, truly.
So is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to talk about, you know, either about the tour or about Sonoran Arts League and how to get involved?
If you go to SonoranArtsLeague.org, there are so many opportunities. There's even a category for volunteering. There's a category for donating. There's a category for all the events that we have in the calendar of events. So if you get to the website, you could get lost in there for hours finding things. There's something in there for everyone. The thing I want to remind everybody about the tour, and I don't think we've hit on it, is the signage. Out on the roads are the big sandwich boards that tell you where the studios are in that particular neighborhood. There'll be arrows and studio numbers. And then as you get closer, you'll find little small directional signs that will say Studio 31, take this left, take this right. So you, once you get into the neighborhood of North Scottsdale, Carefree, and Cave Creek, all you have to do is find your way to the first studio that you want to go to, and you'll be able to get a directory, you'll be able to get to a map. If you want it sooner, you can always call the Art League or go online at the Art League and order the directory, which is $5 up until the tour. Once the tour starts, we give them away. So,
if you're on the website, you can go to the section that's called Hidden in the Hills. And once you get on that, there's a, to get you started, there's a map on there, and you could go through and pick up maybe a couple artists. You can go on, and if you were looking specifically for Gord art, you go on, and all the Gord artists would come up, and it tells what studios they're in so that you can sort of design your own tour. It's very friendly,
very
user-friendly.
Well, the other thing I want to remind people, too, I mean, obviously, up in that area, you're not really walking distance from the other studios.
No,
it's a
self-guided driving tour, and it's free. But, yeah, you do need a car to get from place to place.
Yeah. Well, what advice would you give to anyone who does something for a living that has nothing to do with art? You know, because I think you both have been there and thinks, oh, that's nothing I could ever do. I would like to, but it's not something I could do. Art is just not in me.
Oh,
art is in everyone.
I first say, have you ever tried it? And in most cases, they say no. And I said, you don't know until you try it. In my case, I had never done it. If you've got even a little desire or interest or anything, pick something up and try it. It's just fascinating. Don't worry about whether it's right or wrong. Just enjoy it for what it is.
Really, if you start out experiencing the process, and that process gives you the feeling that you want, then you just go forward. Honestly, I believe truly every single person has an artist inside them. They just haven't let them out yet.
You know, something you shared with me once was about how you've tried different types of art too. I'm sure that's probably the case for you also, Jane. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about how that has maybe opened up new avenues for you in the art that you do specialize in?
It's inspiring to go way outside your comfort zone. There's an event here every August called Art Unraveled, and they have 20 classes a day for 10 days. Everything you can imagine, from dolls to jewelry to painting to learning about color. And I take some of those classes every year way outside of glass, nothing to do with glass. And I'll find myself anywhere from a week to a year later, suddenly the light bulb goes on in my head that says, oh, I need to try this in glass. I have some of my best glass items that I love doing now that are a result of putting two and two together somewhere down the road after taking a class in some totally unrelated field. Same thing, I took classes at Paradise Valley Community College in pastel. I now paint wine barrel stays when it's so hot I can't work outside and I want to keep. Artists can't stop being an artist, so now I have a little table set up in the house in the summer where I take these big, long, bent stays off an old wine barrel and paint it.
I didn't know you did that.
You can't stop. Once you're addicted to art, you can't stop.
Absolutely. I have to say, if I'm not doing an art show, I like to go to art shows and my friends go, are you like mad? It's, no, I love to talk to the other artists, and artists love to share what they do with other artists. And there's so, I mean, there is, number one, there's hardly anything done now that's original. And you can apply, like I know Carol works with Frit Glass. And she probably doesn't know that I work with Frit Glass.
What?
And so there are so many crossovers, and like Carol said, you can apply what she does to what I do. I don't know. Would you like to put a gourd in a piece of your glass sometime?
Well, you can't melt it in, but it sounds like an intriguing
no,
idea
you can't
to
put it
embellish.
In your, yeah. You can't put it in your kiln, that's for sure.
So a lot of the artists work together, too, then.
Oh, there's a lot of collaboration.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I have a jeweler at my studio, Manoh Doyle. And she is a silversmith, so hers is fine jewelry. She does everything, including the little chains and the clasps. And she and I are always looking at ways to mix her fine metal with little small pieces of glass. Mm-hmm. And then we have that big steel artist that we work with that's just part of our team. So you're always thinking of ways to put two and two together.
Yeah.
Two and three together, three and four together.
Well, I have a piece now. We have one of our artists. His name is Bill Gullwing. And he does bronze sculptures, and they're usually body parts. That probably sounds, but he'll do a face,
torso,
or something like that. And he had done a face of a child, and he brought it over. He says, "Would you like to see if you could do something with this?" Well, a face is like a mask, of course. And so I have a piece in my studio that I've put the big headdress on the face that he actually did in bronze. The piece isn't in bronze, but
cool.
It's really fun to do crossover.
You know, every year that I've done this interview with you, Carol, and then with another guest, I've noticed that you all love to share about what it is that you do, and you're very passionate. That comes across. So I do encourage people to go and ask lots of questions, because I got the feeling when I did the tour last year that everybody really does want to share about what it is that they're doing. They don't want to hold it all for themselves. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you got that feeling. I'm glad to know that happens at all the studios.
On that same note, when I started 21 years ago, we would go and talk to the other artists to see if we wanted to have a guest be at our studio. And I met Cynthia Downs, and it was her first year. And she has been at my house all 21 years. And so we've become almost like sisters, certainly like families, and share all sorts of things together. So
Cynthia is another fabulous fine jeweler.
Yeah, she does beautiful contemporary type pieces. They're absolutely gorgeous. And I would like to say one thing. Our cover artist, Sue Hunter, she has, it's a red ibis. It's a mixed media piece, and she will be at my house, my studio 28, but she's so interesting to talk to, and she has switched from, she does a little of everything, but last year she decided that she would start doing mixed media, and she said, "Jane, I had no idea how difficult mixed media is, because sometimes people at the impression you just take a bunch of stuff and throw it all together." And so she got the pleasure of being our cover artist, which is quite an honor, and I'm so happy for her.
I want to say something about that cover piece, too, because she used to do very real paintings, very realistic paintings. And now that she's broken out of that, everybody grows as they go. That's another exciting thing about returning to Hidden in the Hills and seeing the progress that the various artists make. But Sue made a statement with this piece. It's called All Tied Up, and it's a big red ibis on the cover, and he's got a lot of ephemera around him, strings and threads and plastic. And she was making a significant point about the environment. It struck her that this was symbolic of the harm that humans are doing to nature. And knowing how much Jane and I love nature, it just really struck us when we were picking the cover that not only is it a beautiful painting, but that piece of it was very meaningful to me.
And what I love about this directory, too, is that it's like an art magazine, so you can have it on your coffee table because it has so many great pieces of art that you can take a look at inside, too. So give me the details again about the upcoming tour. It'll be held over two separate weekends.
The two weekends that bookend Thanksgiving. So the weekend before is November 22, 23, 24, and the weekend after is November 29, 30, and December 1. So it's Friday through Sunday, 10 to 5, all 6 days.
And a lot of people are probably going to be here from out of town during that time, too.
Great Absolutely. Thing to do with your Thanksgiving family, you know, people in town you're not quite sure. And then it's all up around the Cave Creek Carefree area, so people come up, go out
Very
to lunch.
Scenic.
And then they're so hooked, they'll come back again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's really a fun event. Yeah.
Well, if you want to find out more about it, the website, again, is hiddeninthehills.org. You could also call 480-575-6624. And the best part is that it is absolutely free. Glass artist Carol Perry and gourd artist Jane Boggs, thank you again so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
As you can tell, Carol and I love talking about the Art League.
My next guest this morning is Mariah Moon. She is the CEO of New Life Center, serving domestic violence survivors in the community with emergency shelter and outreach service programs. And you've been on the show before. Thank you for coming again. So tell me about the organization.
Thank you for letting me be here again. New Life Center is a domestic violence service provider. We are one of the largest emergency shelters actually in the country. We're a 104-bed shelter. We're at capacity every single day. One of the most significant pieces about our agency is that 70% of our population are children. So we are bringing in the whole family to receive services. We have emergency shelter mobile advocacy. So we go out into the community to provide support and resources. We've just dove in a little bit to sexual assault response services as well as training. So we are a big, robust nonprofit here in the Valley.
You said you were at capacity, which the good thing is there's obviously a need and you're there to fill it. But the bad thing is you're at capacity. So there's obviously a problem. Has there ever been a time that you weren't at capacity?
You know, there sadly, no. Depending on funding and some of our government contracts, we've had to not be able to provide all of our bed counts. But we are super healthy right now as far as our contracts and our funding. And we are at capacity. The whole county of Maricopa is at capacity. So we are, you know, when a client or family leaves, we're looking at anywhere between a half day to a day before that bed is filled. Mm-hmm. We're going through a centralized screening 1-800 number where all shelters in the Valley are working together to make sure the most vulnerable population and clients are receiving those beds.
So the clients that come to you, I'm guessing the majority are women, but they're not always women, right?
Yeah, not always. We know, as far as research and just being in the movement, we know that domestic violence is not a woman's issue. It's a community issue, and it affects everyone, no matter gender, income, social economics. It's affecting us all. So we wanted to make sure, and everyone in our community wants to make sure, that everyone is able to receive services, whether male or female.
So tell me about the circumstances your clients find themselves in when they arrive at your door. I imagine that for many, this isn't the first time they experienced a situation at home.
Correct. So nationally, as well as in Arizona, you're looking at the attempt to leave up to 7 times. So a lot of times it becomes, how do I make sure that this is the most successful and the safest exit? We know that lethality, it goes up drastically after the person leaves. So we work a lot with our families to make sure that they have safety plans, that they have contacts, so they don't necessarily have to go back. But if they do, that they make sure that they can protect themselves and their children in these scary moments.
So you do see them sometimes go back?
We do see them go back. But, you know, that's the reality kind of the perpetration, the cycle of power and control. So, again, we are making sure that if they do choose to go back, that they do have tools as well as the kids. We have age-appropriate safety plans. So as a kiddo, making sure that we are providing support of what they should be doing if they're in a yuck situation.
And how do your clients come to you? I mean, since you're at capacity, you can't take everyone. So what is the screening process like? And what programs do you offer domestic violence survivors once they are there?
Yeah, so we have our centralized screening hotline that, again, we're working with all shelters in Maricopa. I would say most of our clients are coming from that hotline. We also have amazing relationships with law enforcement and other communities that we've built over the last couple of years. So we are in constant communication with law enforcement. If they have a high lethal situation, they're now able just to pick up the phone. Again, if we're not able to give bed space to that person or to that family that day, we are making sure that they are safe that night and that they have resources and an advocate to speak to. When they're at the shelter, there is we're a trauma-informed agency. So that means that we want to make sure that the client has all the support to empower themselves and for them to create their success story. So we have lay legal advocacy. If the client or family is going through the courts, we have transitional housing and a housing specialist. We have evidence-based curriculum on dealing with being in a domestic violence situation and the dynamics. A lot of times it's hard for one to truly see what is going on when they're deep in a domestic violence situation. So making sure that we have an advocate or support groups for them to really hash out and work out their dynamics within their lives and within their relationships.
Earlier you said it takes about 7 times to leave the situation for good. For someone who's never been through that, can you explain why that's the case?
Yeah, I always tell people when I train on the topic of, you know, it's Monday morning right now. I've had a really busy, you know, hectic morning with my kiddos. Would it be possible for me to never go back home today? It probably wouldn't. My social security cards are there, right. My birth certificates, my clothes, my dogs. At New Life Center, we do allow dogs, but that is a barrier of making sure that do I have safety for not only my children, but for my animals. If my kids are at school today, where do they go? Does dad know or does mom know who's the perpetrator of where the school is located? So as far as safety planning, we want to make sure that someone has control as far as when they exit of their environment, what they need to bring. Do they have money? A lot of times there's joint accounts or that there's awareness of, you know, funding that someone may have control over. So it's a back and forth that is rightfully so, because life is complicated.
Yeah.
Especially if you're living with a spouse, that we want to make sure that someone has all the tools and understanding of what it really takes to leave.
So what are some of the tools that they would need to leave and to stay safe and to stay away from that situation?
Yeah, so it's case by case. So I always advise people to really talk to an advocate. We have actually a 24-hour hotline that's available. But so they can, you know, hash out and work out, do I need to make sure that my kids are in a confidential, safe location after we leave for childcare? Do I need to make sure that I have enough cash and checking accounts that aren't joint? Do I need to make sure that, you know, do I have all of my necessities for documentations for not only my kids, but for my animals too? So we do have step-by-step tools that we can work with someone if they do call. And we also have a bunch of resources on our website.
What's the hotline number and the website?
Our hotline number is 623-932-4404. And our website is newlifectr.org.
And do you have any advice for anyone who might be in a dangerous situation about searching for information online, like going to your website?
Yeah, so I always recommend that you are utilizing, we have an Exit Now. So if you don't have an Exit Now on your screen, whatever resources you're looking up, to make sure that you're clearing out your not only history, but also cookies. We want to make sure that, you know, people that are accessing information are doing it in a safe fashion.
Mariah Moon is the CEO of New Life Center, and I know you have a lot of services available for domestic violence survivors. Can you go into more detail about some of those other programs?
Yeah, so again, 70% of our population are kids, so we want to make sure that though we're not a licensed child care facility or we're not clinicians, to make sure that our environment is as holistic and supportive to our little ones. So we have a child development center, which is its own building where kids can be kids. We have a huge library. We want to make sure that every single child is in school or they're getting whatever they need to make sure that they're back in school. So when they come home from school, we have a robust homework team that comes in. We have a reading dog. We have, again, age-appropriate safety planning for our kids as well as our adults. On the adult side, we want to make sure that we have programs and groups for our adults to attend. So there's about 2 to 3 work groups that people can participate in if they choose to. We actually serve over last year 33,000 meals last year to our clients. So we are, again, free of charge. 3 meals, 2 snacks a day. A lot of times our families come with the clothes on their backs, so we are supplying them with clothes, diapers, toiletries, whatever they need to get themselves on their feet.
So let's talk about donation opportunities then, because this is free of charge to your clients. You know, it still takes a lot of money to make this happen.
Absolutely. So we are, again, every necessity, every need to our family is free of charge. Last year, we had over 29 babies that were born, either born at New Life Center or spent their first couple of years at New Life Center. So as a mom myself, I know it's extremely expensive, the diapers that we're paying for, the formula, baby food, baby clothes, baby shoes, kids' shoes, uniforms. We want to make sure that our kiddos have nice new uniforms. So we are, again, supplying anything and everything that a family would need for 120 days.
So can you give me an example of how far, for example, a $100 donation would go?
Yeah, I would say a $100 donation would cover lay legal support for a week. We have, again, not paralegals or attorneys, but we have lay legal on site. They are very well diverse within the legal system. And so we are funding transportation to get to court, to get that expertise of training of that lay legal, and again, to support the client and the family in the courtroom or through the court process would probably cover that expense.
What about a larger donation or smaller donation? I mean, I just want to give people an idea so they know that a donation of any amount would make a significant difference somehow.
Absolutely. Again, even our little shoes that we're outgrowing constantly with our kiddos would supply that need. Anything that we have for the holidays, our holidays are coming up, and we want to make sure that our families have everything to experience and be a part of for the holiday season. Mm-hmm. For Christmas last year, we had over 11 gifts per child that we were able to get solely because of the donations and the love and support from our community.
And I imagine for some of these kids, it's probably the first Christmas they had with gifts.
Correct. It's and not only the first Christmas or holiday with gifts, but the first safe Christmas, of feeling, you know, that it's okay just to relax and to have fun and to be a kid and to be excited. When you're in a situation of violence, a lot of those emotions and feelings aren't at the surface. So being able to create, we call it a winter wonderland. We have a Polar Express experience that, again, if volunteers want to donate, we donate, making sure that all of our kiddos have Christmas PJs. Those little niceties are coming from our donors and our community, not necessarily from our grants or any other general fund.
Well, that makes me wonder, we're talking about the holiday season and, you know, it can be a very emotional time for many people. Is there a season that's a lot busier for you guys in the year?
As far as clients or just activities?
Clients, yeah.
No, it's interesting. We're literally capacity 12 months out of the year. I would say the energy within the shelter because of the emotions of the holidays are probably highest now until the end of the year. Yeah. But we counter that by making sure that we have lots of opportunities for fun and for just people to feel like they're part of the family and part of their own families within New Life Center.
Well, going back to donations, you do have an event that's coming up on November 8th. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is our first gala. We had a luncheon previous year, so we decided to change it up a little bit. We will be at the Arizona Biltmore Hotel November 8th. And again, it is going to be a wonderful evening. We have a children's choir coming to sing. We have some lovely auction items that we will be auctioning off, including a adopted dog. We have a wonderful menu to have for the evening, and again, just a time for us to share thanks. We'll have a survivor video, and the survivor will be there with us, as well as myself and a couple other speakers for the event.
And that's on November 8th. Do you have to buy tickets or RSVP
ahead
of time?
You do. So if you go onto our website, newlifectr.org, you will be able to find all ticketing information. Again, it's Starry Night Gala on November 8th at the Arizona Biltmore. We have tickets and also sponsorships. If your company or if a group of people or folks in the community want to get together and sponsor the event, we're able to provide that as well.
Well, you said you were going to have a survivor share their story at the upcoming gala, but do you have a story that you could share with us this morning that illustrates the impact that you're having on the community?
Yeah, I had most recently, and I won't say the date, but I guess the male survivors and their families of, again, it's really hard socially for us to grasp that concept, but having a dad come in with three children and sincerely needing our services, being in a violent situation, but seeing the joy of having, again, that Papa Bear within our campus and the wraparound of support that he received from the other parents, mostly moms, was just one of the most beautiful things. I would see him eating by himself, and slowly he became part of the circle. As far as services, we were able, you know, he needed that safety. He needed that space. A lot of people have the misconception that there's a need for jobs. There is, you know, some victims and some survivors do need to get employed, but this dad had employment. Mm-hmm. He had support. He needed to get out of a lethal, violent situation, but his life continued. So he was able to continue working. His kiddos were able to continue to thrive in school, and we were able to support him in the lay legal capacity as well as advocacy of steps to make sure that we got him a safe home for him and his kids.
Mm. Mariah Moon is the CEO of New Life Center. Can you talk a little bit about volunteer opportunities as well? I know it's kind of hard probably to have volunteers interacting with the clients that you have, but I'm sure there are plenty of other opportunities too.
Yeah, there actually is an opportunity whether you want to engage with our clients or in another capacity. We have, of course, a background check that folks have to go through, but we have a lot of opportunities for the holidays coming up, Halloween. Not only are we looking for volunteers to kind of supply us with that atmosphere of Halloween, but we also, all of our kiddos deserve costumes. And we have a parade of showing off our costumes and trick-or-treating. So that's something that people can be a part of for Thanksgiving. Again, we're open 24/7, so we're always looking for volunteers to come in and serve a meal. Probably not at ideal times, but a lot of our staff, they work hard throughout the year, and so we try to give them those holidays off. So we need volunteers to supply our campus as well as our dinners with being served and volunteered in that capacity. And then for Christmas, we have lots of opportunities to work, whether in our child development center with our kids. Again, we create the Polar Express experience over at our store. We actually put up a little storefront so our families can get the benefit and experience of shopping for their kids, again, free of charge. But that is needed to be staffed by volunteers, and then Christmas Eve and Christmas dinner. So there are a lot of opportunities. We also have the back end if one chooses not to participate in a direct service of working in the administration office, working at Hope's Closet. There's just ample opportunity for any volunteer that's interested.
You mentioned a background check, so there's an application that needs to be filled out, it sounds like. Is all this information on the website?
Yeah, we go through a background check, but all of the information for volunteers is on our website, newlifecentrctr.org, and that's where you will be in contact with our volunteer coordinator, and there's an onboarding of application as well as a little bit of orientation, a background check for people to get involved.
So is there anything else you want to share with our listeners about the organization that we haven't touched on yet?
So one of the other services that we provide are sexual assault response services. We know the intersection of sexual violence within domestic violence relationships is part of the power and control, but we also know that there's not a lot of services for sexual assault survivors, just around. So New Life Center took the approach and took the stance last year to make sure that we were providing advocacy and support for victims of sexual violence, whether within the intimate partner domestic violence situation or just solely on its own. We want to make sure that everyone feels safe and knows that, you know, New Life Center can support whether it's family violence, domestic violence, or sexual violence.
So can you go a little bit into, you know, if there is a family member or a neighbor or a friend that sees that, you know, maybe someone they know and love is a victim of domestic violence, but maybe they haven't shared it, you know, maybe they haven't said anything. What could someone do if they think that there's a situation happening?
Yeah, the first thing I would suggest is going to the experts. Again, as I mentioned before, leaving is one of the most lethal times, so we don't take it lightly as far as it's not just easy just to leave, we say. So making sure that a friend or family member is giving either our phone number, national resource, any information that someone can either call through our hotline or go look on our website, look on the Arizona Coalition to End Sexual and Domestic Violence warm line or website, as well as national. There's steps that need to be taken, but it needs to be at the time and rhythm of that survivor. We can't interject and push someone because, again, mm-hmm. we're looking at one of the highest lethal times, especially with families, especially with the whole home. So making sure I'm actually holding one of our shoe cards that we have of just discreetly sliding either our number as a resource or a website. If you just Google National Domestic Violence Support, someone should be able to pop up and get the tools that they need to start a very calculated approach of leaving the violent situation.
You said earlier New Life Center is one of the biggest shelters in the country. Is that?
Yeah, so we're one of the largest in the country. We are the largest in Arizona, but we actually started in the Wigwam dormitory. I want to say we were under 10 beds. So within 15 years, we've grown to one of the largest. Mm-hmm. Our campus is one of the most beautiful campuses I've seen. We are casita style, so we really take the approach of we want to make sure the autonomy of the family is unified, so they are staying in a casita on their own and working within the community through the campus as far as getting access to resources or support.
So obviously in the last, you said 15 years, you've really grown. Are there any plans for the future to grow even more?
Yeah, I think as we tap into sexual assault response, that will also overlap on, you know, we're seeing a heightened level of human trafficking. And it may not be, the levels may have not gone up, but we're seeing this cultural change of, you know, the acceptance of realizing that this is an issue and that these survivors of human trafficking need resources. We do serve and have seen human trafficking clients here at the shelter, but to make sure that they have wraparound services that are unique to their situation is something that I can see us moving into. I had mentioned before, we do and we are serving animals when we can, but to have a true animal program at the shelter has been one of my wants mm-hmm. and kind of thoughts for next steps, making sure that, you know, New Life Center was one of the first shelters to realize that, you know, boys deserve to stay with their parents and their mom when they're fleeing, because before in shelter, they were separated. Of us coming in the same stance of realizing that the full family, including the animal family, needs to come into the shelter, stay in that casita, get services, and make sure that they're part of the healing process.
And a lot of times, I'm sure they're a part of the healing process for the kids.
Yeah, too. The healing process for the kids. I had someone that say, well, is the dog a behavioral dog or emotional support dog? And I said, every dog is an emotional support dog.
Right.
And to have those, again, those rhythms for those kids, those security blankets that at the end of the day, they probably don't have. The animal approach is, you know, that's an emotional attachment that all children as well as adults need.
So give me the details again about the upcoming event and how people can get tickets for this or participate.
So our Starry Night Gala is November 8th at the Arizona Biltmore starting at 5:30. You can go on to our website, New Life CTV. ATR.org. And again, it's just a wonderful evening that we have planned. We have a video from a survivor speaking. We have a children's choir. We have a violinist coming. And it's just a time to get dressed up and to not only have a good time and to celebrate just being together as a community, but also it's for a good cause. We'll have a live auction going on, an ask event at the end. And, you know, you'll be able to hear from not only myself, but a survivor, from one of our board members, of, you know, the successes that we make truly because of our community.
And also, before we wrap up, can you give the hotline number again, too?
So our number, it's 24/7, 623-932-4404. You can also look on our website at newlifectr.org. And you can also utilize our Arizona Coalition, acesdv.org. The Arizona Coalition to End Sexual and Domestic Violence is a great resource that we have here in Maricopa that can also give warm line support and resources available to anyone that needs it.
Mariah Moon is the CEO of New Life Center. Thank you for coming in again today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you also for joining us for Sunday Sunrise, a public affairs show produced locally by Intercom Phoenix. I'm Minnie Salas, your host. Have a great Sunday.